Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
See, if you're always winning and you don't really understand what it is to win, you got to take those losses. You got to take those hits. There's got to be the valleys, the peaks, the ups, the downs. In order for you to, when it does happen, you go, wow, qué rico. You know, this is what it's all about. And not only that, it's never about making it, guys. It's always about maintaining it. That's the toughest part.
Welcome, everyone, to Spark Your Fire. As always, it's John here, and I'm here with my my friend and colleague, Jazz. Jazz, how are you today?
I'm really good, John, and really excited with the guest that we have on the show today. Actually, you are more excited than I am, so...
Yeah, I'm very excited. I've been watching this guy on YouTube for 10 years. I've just creeped him out. Like single white female, but we're very excited to talk to our next guest today. So it's an absolute pleasure to introduce you to David Morgan. So David Morgan is known as the Silver Guru and the author of many books, including The Silver Manifesto and The Morgan Report. He's an expert in the commodity space, and after last week's hashtag Silver Squeeze, he's also the busiest man on YouTube. So we're very lucky to have him with us today. Welcome to Spark Your Fire, David.
Well, John and Jazz, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Good to have you here. Look, we have to start by, I guess, talking about last week. What's your take on the Wall Street Bet Silver Short Squeeze? And I guess the question is, did it not happen, or are we just really waiting for the silver contracts to expire so that physical delivery can squeeze? So what's your take on last week's silver short squeeze, and did it miss?
I'm still sorting it out somewhat, but what took place, first of all, before it started, I was told by one of the primary retail dealers that asked me the question, did I know that the tightness in the gold, particularly the silver market right now, again, let me repeat, that was about a month before the Wall Street Bets group morphed, or a subgroup went into the Wall Street Silver Group. And I usually do that survey about once a month. And I've gotten, I wouldn't say lazy, but I do that survey about every 2 or 3 months, where I call 3 or 4 primary dealers. You all know them by name. They've made videos. They're pretty famous. And I ask them, you know, how's business, basically? And is the market tight? Is it loose? Is there more buyers and sellers and that type of thing? This is all on the retail side, by the way. And so I had that clue. And then all of a sudden, the Wall Street Bets happened, and then the GameStop. And actually, I was busy writing the report that week, so I wasn't really paying a lot of attention to the outside influences. I was busy headlocked and down and typing away, right? And one of my members said, I guess you know what's going on with GameStop, and this is, what effect could this have on the silver market? So I had to stop writing the report and check out what was going on. And of course, I'm a pretty quick study on this stuff. I've been in the financial markets since I was 16 years old. So not that I can't learn more, and I'm not claiming to know everything. But holy moly, what a short squeeze. That's really phenomenal. So then, as you know, it turned into the Wall Street Silver. And we started the hashtag Silver Squeeze. So did it take place? Yes, definitely on the retail side. I think that's unquestionable. Did it happen on the silver market, which is basically the paper market? Yes, that's unquestionable. Why? Because we had approximately 100 million ounces of, I'll put in quotation marks, physical silver moved into the SLV. And that is unprecedented. Usually in a good, strong year for silver, there's about 120 million ounces on an annual basis. Last year was unprecedented. We had over 300 million ounces that went into the silver. We call them ETFs and ETPs. Not to confuse anybody, I think your audience is pretty sophisticated, but ETPs are exchange-traded products, and ETFs are exchange-traded funds. And I'm going to just back up and digress a bit for everybody, because I know you have a sophisticated audience, but it might bear taking a minute to just explain that way back when the GLD started, Section 7 licenses, in other words, your stockbroker, your wealth manager, are only allowed to touch stocks But the commodities boom happened with China going crazy 20 years ago. So the brokers thought, how can we start trading commodities but just be stockbrokers? And the answer is, we'll create an exchange-traded fund. And we'll put the commodity in there. We'll turn it into shares or stocks. And then we're on our way. And that's what happened. So the GLD was the first one. Of course, I'm old enough to have seen all this stuff. And then I got a bunch of questions. Is there going to be a silver one? It's inevitable there will be a silver one. And now I don't know how many there are, but there's several. So the point is that, yes. Now, here's the answer to your question. If you look at the last time there was this much demand in the physical silver market, there was about, I think it was about a 3-month delay. So I can't really do it without a drawing aid. But if you could picture the amount of silver going flat, 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 and then all of a sudden it goes way up. And now if you imagine the price goes flat, 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 goes way beyond that in time, so like 2 months, and then it catches up to the amount of silver that's been taken off the exchange, or the amount of silver that's held in ETFs, I should say. So here's the ETFs, goes way up, and then it goes past that and the price catches up. So I am personally not, and this is that's data, that's a fact. Will that guarantee it happens the next time? The answer is no. But all the evidence shows us that that's the most likely scenario. So unless we see, go down and stay down, let me be more succinct. I definitely believe that's what's going to happen. Don't give up. It's kind of the silver market will scare you out of shake you out. I mean, there's a lot of or wear you out, and there's a lot of things that goes on the commodities, futures, exchanges that most people are not really understanding properly. So yeah, it's not over till it's over. Even though you don't see instant gratification, which we're all used to with our fast foods and our microwave ovens and our Photoshop pictures and all that stuff. The silver market, there is a delay between the amount of offtake and the price to catch up to.
Yeah, not wrong, just early. And I think, Jazz, that's what you were saying before we went live, that's what you're seeing in the charts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. When we look at the charts and also some of the futures that are expiring, David, it all looks like that there's still another move, at least another move up in the very near short term before maybe temporarily plateaus and then moves up again. So I'm definitely with you. People holding onto the bags may get tired, but it's all happening as we speak. And we can see that in some of the mining stocks as well. If we look at the junior miner stocks and in general, some of the best performers on the ASX in the small cap space, it's all miners basically that are winning. One question that I did had, David, and John and I were discussing before the recording as well on that is, in this sort of environment, if we look at the backdrop of what's happening behind the scenes with the macro landscape, and we discussed that a lot on the podcast where a lot of money is being printed, M1 supply, M2 supply, we're talking about over here, right? You'll generally see that gold will start to shoot up much higher to form its base against the new currency that has been printed. But this time what we have seen is gold has been, it did went up last year, but it's gone stagnant to some extent over the last few months kind of thing. And then you look at some of the competitors to gold or more of speculations like digital gold, which is Bitcoin, they are shooting up the roof. Do you think crypto, I guess the question that I have is, do you think that crypto is taking the share of the precious metals, specifically gold and silver, which is why we are seeing the market or the precious metals to starting to move or lag behind quite a lot?
This is opinion, but it's a studied opinion. I'm not just pulling it up like this is, I want to say this. So great question. To me and what I've studied, and again, this is still, I don't have enough data to say, this is it. I've looked at enough data to give me this opinion. the really high risk takers in the metals are silver investors, not gold investors. In fact, you could almost call any silver investor a silver speculator because of the way it moves. It's got these huge high spikes up and down, and then it'll go flatline for a long time and wear you out, and you get out of silver and move into something else. So when silver was experiencing that, Bitcoin really wasn't doing a whole lot, but a lot of people saw that it was moving and silver wasn't. So early on, going back a few years, like I'm going to guess, I'd have to look at a chart, but maybe two or three, probably more like three, a lot of worn out silver investors sold their silver either at par or a loss and bought Bitcoin. And it had an effect. How big an effect, nobody really knows. But I would say from where I sit and look at that market on a daily basis, it affected the silver market. To a large degree, no. To a noticeable degree, yes. Okay. So most of those people, the highly aggressive metals investors or investors or speculators, were in Bitcoin 3 years ago. Now, go to present day. What's going on? It's the slow money, the big money, the establishment money, the wealth offices, the, you know, the big boys, let's say, the wealth effect. And they've kind of seen the same thing, but they're 3 years behind the silver people. I'm making a generality, but I'm trying to make the point. And they're doing exactly what you suggested. A lot of them have given up on gold or saying, I'm selling half my gold and buying Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to borrow against my gold and buy Bitcoin. Or I'm going to only hold this much. And is it having an effect? And the answer is yes. Is it significant? The answer is I don't know yet. And I think not longer term. But on the short to intermediate term, yes. So I hope that answered your question. It's a fascinating question because I am for competing currencies. I am not a silver-only guy. I am a hard asset person. I am a real wealth person. I am somewhat diversified. I do focus when the market's moving. In other words, when the copper market's going crazy, I think you want to be in copper. You know, when the lithium space took off, we wanted to be in lithium. You know, we made money in moly when it was in a short squeeze. We used a zinc company when zinc was hitting a squeeze. I wouldn't say squeeze, wrong word. When there was a shortfall in the zinc market, Chris that used to work for me found a great zinc play that also had a great silver credit with it. So, you know, we look at what the market says, not what we think or what we want or what we project. But I'm all for competing currencies. And by the way, I'm not a huge fan of Bitcoin. I don't really have time to go into it, and I'd really rather not discuss it. But if you want to know my views, I wrote about 7 years ago an article that is called My Two Bits About Bitcoin. And everything I laid out in that article, you know, kind of being somewhat of a visionary, I don't get it right every time, but I think I was pretty accurate in there. I said, I'm not going to tell you good or bad about Bitcoin if I'm really free market. The market decides, not me. Mm-hmm. However, if it starts to get too much enthusiasm, that's a word I don't think I wrote, but saying now, look out. Why? Because the money powers do not want competition. And if it gets too popular, you might see some problems involving the regulators is basically what I outlined. So there's that. We could ask more about it. I'm rather stay to the metals, commodities, ags, yep. Housing, or whatever. But I'll answer any question. You know that.
Well, I just wanted to pick up on that because the market is craving alternatives to fiat. And historically, gold and silver are those primary alternatives. And I agree. I think they will assert themselves. I think they're in the process of asserting themselves as real money. But what I find interesting is there's the Bitcoin as an alternative, but actually what's also presenting itself as an alternative is passive investing in ETFs in like the S&P 500. So why would you save in dollars or lira or currency when you could save in a S&P 500 index fund? It's another passive form. Do you see that as well? Is that just another savings mechanism when fiat's not worth anything?
Yeah, well, if you look at, you know, monetary history, and I'm certainly not maybe the most studied in it, but I've certainly looked at it for a long time. And you see there's two depressions. There's a hyperinflationary depression and there's a debt liquidating depression. You really only see a debt liquidating depression if you've got a gold and silver backed currency or a gold backed currency. You won't see it in a non-backed currency. So we're heading toward a hyperinflationary depression. And in those instances, you always see anything but cash go up. So if you go to Venezuela currently or whatever, you're going to see the stock market. So you can use And an index fund is easy for people. You know, I mean, most people can't pick stocks. So if you use an index S&P 500 ETF, you're way ahead of trying to analyze a stock or look at a breakout point or learn technical analysis or balance your portfolio and stuff. Just buy the S&P index and relax, because most fund managers can't beat it. I beat it the last 2 years, but anyway, so I agree with you. And I'm just pointing out now, I want to spend a bit more time on the hyperinflationary depression. In a depression, you have high unemployment, either one, deflation or inflationary depression. Uncertainty about the future. You have disruption throughout the economy, meaning like supply chains break down, trust breaks down, interaction between people breaks down, all that stuff that happens in either case. The only real difference between an inflationary depression and a debt liquidating depression is in one, the currency becomes more valuable, and the other one, the currency becomes more worthless. That's what happens. Now, in the case of the United States being the reserve currency, I'm not sure we're going to see a true hyperinflationary depression, which means we'll go the route of where you're not going to need a wheelbarrow of U.S. dollars to buy a loaf of bread. What is occurring now is what's called stagflation, where some things that we need go up, like food, and things that we don't need, like the latest flat screen device, go down. And there's other reasons for that, but that's the basic idea. So I don't think you're going to see 100% inflation year over year ever. I think before that happens, there'll be a new currency, and it'll probably be a central bank digital currency and a cashless system. And I've been writing about that in Morgan Report for about the last 6 or 7 months, the way I see it. And so far, the data is supporting what I'm looking at. And it's not just me. Believe me, there's a lot of people in my industry that are smarter than I am or better or whatever. I got a pretty good thinker. Thank you, God. But that's how I see it. And you can hear it. I mean, if you pay attention to the mainstream financial press, it's pretty obvious what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really explicit about it. In a podcast or YouTube clip you did late last year, you mentioned that, that if inflation adjusted off the 1980 high, silver in 2020 terms would be around $600. Now, you didn't necessarily endorse the number, but you said, you know, you could mathematically get there if you tried. Right. And other people have made sort of similar comments. So I just wanted to, I can't get you on the program without asking, where could silver and gold go in this cycle? And how do you know when the cycle's over? Like, how do you know when it's topping out?
Very good questions. So let me answer the last question first. How do you know when it's topping out? And the answer to that one this time is you got to be, excuse the word, damned careful. And why do I say that? Because, first of all, on a monometallic standard or a gold standard, and all you have is gold in the primary market, but it's not monetized, although the banks still cherish it. And it is a tier one asset, which means that we don't have it in the money supply, really, but the banks still covet it. What you have is an infinite price of gold. And the reason it's an infinite price of gold is because there's no limit to the amount of fiat that can be printed, okay? So if you do the math and you're going against, well, there's this much gold. So if you do it on an M1 basis where it's just currency, the current price of gold is somewhere north of $10,000. So if you took all the gold that purportedly is in Fort Knox, all 265 million ounces of it, and you divided it into the M1 money supply, that number would be north of 10,000. So that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is, what do you do if you get to the top? Well, the top to me will be when, you know, four financial mainstream TV studios are outside of my front door filming me and asking me, where's the best place to buy it? If they want to buy it, it's time to sell it. And I'm being a little funny, but actually not that much. I don't think that'll ever happen. But what I do suggest, so I will see it from my subscriber base. I'll see it from the amount of demands on my time and other. There'll be a lot of other factors. The question, again, I'm going to repeat, is what do you do with it? If you are at a price of, I'll make it up, $12,827 gold per ounce, and you have to move it into fiat, and then the fiat was worth zero 2 weeks later, you made a really bad move. So what I've suggested for years, and especially to my paid subscribers, is be ready. Think ahead. Do you want to put it into land, real estate? Do you want to put it into a business? Do you want to pay off debt? Do you want to start a foundation? Do you want to leave a legacy? You know, what do you want to do with it? Because I think, and until I have more information, I mean, I don't know. At the top, maybe the dollar, you know, there's a new digital currency. You don't have a choice. I don't know what it looks like. What I do know is you don't want to sell for fiat that fails and be left holding the bag. You defeated your whole purpose for owning precious metals all the way up. And I think there was a question before the what do we do at the top? So refresh my memory if you would.
It's sort of how do you know when you're at the top? Like in the 80s, Volcker came in, hiked interest rates, and it was kind of a, it was like ringing a bell to the market that, like it's over. But there's no indication that there's going to be any end to this. So, I mean, I guess, how do you know? Is it a ratio?
You really don't, yeah. I mean, I've called every top in the silver market so far. And the way I've done it is basically because they're parabolic and nothing goes parabolic forever. And then sentiment. And I've got my own sentiment indicator because I have a paid service. So when I see, you know, if I'm getting two subscriptions a week and all of a sudden I start getting two a day, you know, for a week or two in a row, I'm pretty close to knowing that must be a top. So I get a little bit of an advantage being kind of, you know, since I'm in the industry. And that's one way to know the top. As far as, you know, what will happen, I think before it goes cuckoo, well, I shouldn't say cuckoo, let me retract that. Before gold gets to the price that most analysts think it's going to get to, which is at least 5,000, and I think we'll see 5,000, I really do, but before it gets to 10, and I'm guessing this, I don't know, we could just have a whole new monetary system. So everybody that has, you know, a bank account gets put on the new system, which eliminates the banks altogether, and it's just run basically out of the Federal Reserve. And you have a direct connection between the modern money theory, which means it can print to infinity, and you get an allotment based on the UBI and your social credit score. And you have 85% of the population on the planet that's dependent on the socialist system that's resurrected on a global basis. And then the other entrepreneurial class that's allowed to exist is pretty much done on a corporate level that's already in bed with the banks anyway and are really on top of governments globally anyhow. Because if you look at the way I look at it, and I can almost prove it if anyone can take the time to look at it, is the people and the plants, animals and the ground, that's all the bottom of the pyramid. Above that's government, the authority figures, the authoritarians. But above that is the corporate structure on a global basis. It's your, you know, ITT, it's your Dow Chemical, it's your DuPont, it's your 3M, it's your Google, Facebook, Monsanto, IB Farben or Bayer. I mean, it's all these huge multinational, did I say multinational? I meant to say multinational corporate conglomerates that have their octopus tentacles around the globe. That's who's running it. And they get fed by the banking system just above them, which is the commercial banks. How can you have a company that's an abject failure that can borrow as much money from Wall Street as they ever want to? Because they're in bed together. That's why. So government means very little, although everyone's worried about their politics. It's really the corporate structure. So we're just going to eliminate we're not going to eliminate government. The authoritarianism is going to increase drastically, and it's really bad now, in my opinion. But from the banking side, they're just going to eliminate a couple layers of banks. You're just going to bank direct, and you're going to either be a good citizen or not. And based on what you do or don't do, think or don't think, say or don't say, you're going to be allotted a certain amount of basic income. That's the direction we're going. Does that mean we're going to get there? And the answer is no. The answer is we can stand up for ourselves, but it isn't going to be easy. And everyone's going to have to take their part in it. That doesn't mean everybody has to do something like get in the streets or, and I think that's ineffective anyway, but But that's the direction. I probably should pause and get some feedback from you both. But that's unfortunately it. And with today's technology, it's relatively easy. In fact, I'll go one step further. It's proven. China's a test case. Look, China, in many instances in the big cities, so it's roughly 400 million people, which is like 60 million more than the total population in the U.S., they are totally cashless. And they go into a shop, and it's all by facial recognition. So the only way the door opens is the facial recognition system knows who you are, the door opens. You go in, you pick out what you want, you put it on the buying platform, I'll call it. It knows what's there. I don't know if it reads the SKUs or whatever, but it knows what's there. And then you hold up your phone and you make a payment and you walk out with your goods. Never seen another human in the store. It's all done automatically. And that's like one in China. It's all over the place. So that is the test case on a large population mass that proves the system. And then, of course, China has their own digital yuan, which is the first national currency that's really in act right now, and it's being used right now. In fact, they've gone as far as giving away some of their digital yuan just to get people to familiar with it and start using it. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely the direction we're going, and they're the first. They're leading the way, you might say. So it's very upsetting to me, being, you know, libertarian-minded and freedom-oriented and, you know, people's rights and, you know, all that I stand for. But we can't ignore the trend, and the trend is there, and it's accelerating. My personal take on the currency situation is I am for competing currencies, but I still don't see, and maybe it's just because of my age, anything more decentralized than the precious metals. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't need a brokerage account. You just walk into a dealer with some of that cash that still works, put it on the counter, you get a silver coin. And if you rent a room for, you know, 3 ounces of silver a month or whatever it is, it's pretty anonymous. And Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Dogecoin, you know, you name it, RXP or XRP, Ripple used to be, I mean, all that stuff, you have to go through a Coinbase or Kraken or, you know, there's all my, you know, I'm familiar with the space. I have someone that writes that for the report every month that's much more familiar than me, so I won't embarrass myself, but I have a pretty good grasp about it, especially from the bigger picture perspective, which is a security issue, but I digress. Come back. That is a system that pretty much you got to KYC, you got to know your customer. So it isn't really as decentralized, in my opinion, as a gold or silver coin or bar would be.
So just on something we were discussing before, David, with the Wall Street bets. Now, they did try to move the price, and they were able to move price a little bit that particular week. But there's a lot of contracts that are expiring over the next few months. In the past, I am assuming, I don't have any proof for this, but I'm assuming they would have normally been, majority would have been cash settled contracts where once the contract expires, people get their money. Do you think with what's going on with the silver squeeze that this time people will intentionally demand physical delivery to push the price of the silver higher?
Great question. And, you know, I mean, it's my age or maybe my grumpiness. Excellent question. I've heard that for years. And the answer is it could. I mean, I will never rule it out. In fact, I'd favor it. Point number one is there's a restriction. After Warren Buffett took 129.7 million ounces off the silver exchange, he got 90 million ounces immediately. And the other 40 million they put basically on hold. My words, not his. I don't know if he'd even admit this. But anyway, the point is that after that happened, there is now a limit to the amount of silver that could come off. And that is 1,500 contracts or 7.5 million ounces. So even though the deliveries might show on paper 75 million ounces, all that you can get is 7.5 million. So that's point number one. Point number two is what people don't know is how many options on futures are traded. And if you look at what's known as delta hedging, it's a fancy word for algorithms beating the crap out of the public. What does that mean? It means the closer you get to options expiration, and the public is notoriously long, the machines, the quants, the algorithms will sell as much paper as they have to move the price wherever they want it to be, so that on options expiration, the bullion banks win and the public loses. And you can set your watch by that over and over and over again. I don't know if you are familiar in Australia with the Peanuts cartoon, but remember how Lucy holds a football for Charlie Brown to kick? And as soon as he gets up there, she pulls the football away and he goes up and lands on his ass. But he keeps doing it again and again and again. That's the options market in silver. So the answer, unfortunately, is based on all the experience I've had watching this market almost daily for 40 years, I don't think so.
David, I want to go back to sort of where you were going a few moments ago, which is like what comes next, sort of the philosophy of economics and finance a little bit. I'm not optimistic, and it's not because I think we're bankrupting ourselves, which of course I think we are, but it's because I think we've like hollowed out the intellectual framework to assess any of these things. You know, as a society, we don't necessarily believe in free markets anymore. We're locking our citizens in their homes. We're bankrupting ourselves. These deficits defy mathematics. And my concern is really the education, because I don't even think that we can fight the problem without the education. So would you say that there's a link between kind of this education problem that I think we have in terms of understanding some of these issues around free markets and the financial bankruptcy that seems to be looming? Is it ultimately an education problem?
Yeah, John, I think you nailed it, and I'll expand. You know, I can talk, but you know, if you look at statues, you know, you never see a statue to a committee, right? You always see a statue to, you know, Genghis Khan or, you know, some general or some inventor of I won't even say the word, some inventor of some medical breakthrough or something like that. But you never see like there's this, you know, 12 people committee that came up with this idea. So the idea about individual freedom and individuality and the ability for any person to be themselves, that doesn't mean you can't have help and that you don't need others and there is a community. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that if you can't have a free mind, you can't have anything. And that's based on real education. So I would say that. And I go a step further because I, you know, gave you some emotion surrounding the China thing. But the Chinese, to the best of my knowledge, the Chinese are the only ones that have statues to scholars. Mm. So a scholar was revered in China. And, you know, to the best of my knowledge, you don't see that. It's usually military people or inventors or business people or something like that, presidents, of course, and that type of thing. I'm not against it. What I'm trying to do is contrast societies from the West to the East. And the East, at a time, revered scholars. Mm. And I think you're right. I think unless people know what they know, I mean, I close out a lot of my podcasts, but there's nothing more powerful than the truth. And the truth is that the bigger the moral, the bigger the debasement of the currency, the lower the moral standards of the society. That's pretty well known. I mean, Robert Prechter does a great job on that. I've done some pretty good work on it, and I don't lecture on it much. I just make that statement. But if you really want to dig in, you'll find it to be true. Also, you know, the movie Idiocracy, which you can look up, I call it a mini documentary, but it's all about dumbing down the society at large. So, John, I think you hit it. You know, education is key, and the education needs to be more broad-based on real life, which means, you know, how does the money system work? Is it fair? Is it just? Is it correct? Why do some people get rich? You know, there's a lot. It's not all about money either, but it's about real economics, and very few teach real economics. I'm an Austrian adherent, but I still think it can be improved. And I think there's an adjustment that can be made that would be more beneficial. But right now we're at the opposite end of that spectrum. We're in a we're moving toward a complete totalitarian system where there are a few at the top and the rest are basically a slave class, even though a lot won't admit it or understand it. And this is the direction that really frightens me from a lot of aspects. But if people were educated to the level of understanding history and knew what these type of moves actually ended like, they would be up in arms right now because they would be educated enough to understand what the outcome is ahead of time. But since they're undereducated, it's not going to happen. At least, well, we don't know where it's going to go exactly, but we know what the trend is. And I really can't say enough about it, John. I think that's it. I have one more comment, and this, I think, kind of summarizes it at least well for me. People generally know the price of everything and the value of nothing. You know, just because a car costs a lot doesn't make it, you know, sometimes it does make it better, but the value that we have as human beings isn't what our material wealth is. Mm. Primarily what we can do and the joy we can bring. And a lot of that has to do with learning. Some of the most, you know, what did my girls get from me? One, life isn't fair. Any way you turn it, upside down, sideways, doesn't matter where you're born. You know, some places you have a more of an advantage, I admit that, but it's not fair. Mm. Second rule is be a lifelong learner. Never, ever stop learning. And you learn enough in high school and college to learn how to learn. That's the number one most important thing coming out of there, because you give up on learning. And now the learning thing has been dumbed down to you get a certain, you know, YouTube addiction, and you start getting in the echo chamber and you only listen to one side, and you kept getting this reverberation, and you're convinced that all this data you have is accurate and you know everything and can't get straight why the other side doesn't see your point. Mm. And I made a habit from almost the very beginning to watch both extremes. The extreme left or extreme right, if you want to use that metaphor. My idea was, because being an engineer initially is you look at everything you integrate is from zero to infinity. So if you look at something that's absolutely not there to every possibility, and you look at that function between those two extremes, you covered it. And that's what you, so that my mind works like that. I was trained to think like that. So it's very important for me to look at as much as I can both sides. Now, I'm biased in some areas, especially about sound money, but I still don't give up on what the alternative viewpoints are, because I can learn something. And I certainly have, and I certainly can appreciate both sides of an argument. I mean, you know, libertarians, I'll classify myself as that, although it's not exactly true. But, you know, we're pretty socially liberal, but not totally, and I won't go further with that. But fiscally responsible. I mean, I was taught, and I think it's the best way to live, is to live within your means. But if you're in a corrupt financial system and a phony, baloney, funny money system, it's pretty hard to put your labor and get paid efficiently enough and correctly enough to break free. And it's designed that way.
Hmm. Which precious metal do you see outperforming in this bull run? Is it, do you think it's gold, silver, oil, uranium is being talked a lot these days? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts are we're in the last phase of a major secular bull market in the precious metals. I think silver's gold-silver ratio will keep going down. So if gold goes to 5,000, and I do believe it'll go to at least that number, but who knows, then the gold-silver ratio could be somewhere around maybe 25 to 1. It could be the monetary ratio, 16 to 1. I don't know. But I do know that in major bull markets of the past, and so I'm projecting that we will see the gold-silver ratio go down, meaning that silver will outperform gold. So if gold goes up, let's say doubles from 2,500 to 5,000, silver could triple or quadruple. That's what I expect. Uranium's a tough one. We have a uranium stock I just love and held on to it. They also have a great vanadium situation with their output. And I know the manager, known the company for years, and I just held it because I have it as a speculation. So this is money you can afford to lose. Finally, that thing took off and it went straight up. It's still in a few dollars, and that thing used to be like a $40 stock. So I'm real happy for myself and my subscribers. I think that company could get back to 30 or 40 bucks. So when you start off in the pennies and it goes to that kind of level, it's not Bitcoin, but it's pretty nice.
Right. Your target still holds at 600. You still think it will
see? Well, that's a number that John brought up. The CPI based inflation adjusted price for silver right now is about 150 using the government's current statistics. And a friend of mine, John Williams, that writes his own newsletter, he's a true economist, and he writes one that's on the website shadowstats.com. And what shadow stats are is the statistics that were used up until about 1980. Using those metrics, which use food and energy in the inflation index, which they took out after that time frame, if you use those statistics, it comes out $600 silver. So I think it's a more accurate number. But, you know, before you get to 600, you got to get to 100, right? So I like to be conservative and say, you know, could it go where? Yeah, no one knows how high is high. And silver, you know, the way it's going technologically, and depending on what happens on the planet, you could see silver not only outperform gold, as I'm pretty convinced it will, but you could see ratios that would be unimaginable now, having just been to like 125 to 1 in March of last year. You know, 5 Marches from now, 5 years from now, maybe that ratio will be, you know, 12.5 to 1. So it did 10 times better than gold, you know. Is that going to happen? I don't know. But the trend, I'm pretty certain of. And the last thing is, since silver is going down in the gold-silver ratio, that's confirmation of my analysis that we are in the last, that we're in a bull market phase, even though bull markets will fake you out. You know, they'll go, oh, gold's doing nothing. Look at Bitcoin. Even silver's doing better than gold, you know, and on and on and on again. And all of a sudden, a quiet market, the old adage, never sell a quiet market. All of a sudden, gold takes off and it's up, you know, 50 bucks. Oh, wow, I had a great week, and then it's up 100 bucks. What's going on with gold? And then all of a sudden you're at 2,000, making a new high, nominal new high, I will add. And all of a sudden gold starts to get a bid, and people are interested in gold again. People are not interested in value investing for the most part. They're interested in momentum investing. When things are moving, let me on. Fear of missing out. Everybody else is doing it. Ah, let me too. And you got to be careful there. I use momentum trading. I really do. But I'm very careful about it. And there's certain ways that the market will show you it's ready to make a Momo move before anyone else sees it. So there's a way to do it. And I, you know, but nothing's perfect in technical analysis, but there are tools and there's things you can use that certainly tilt the terms in your favor if you know what to look for. And you do technical work, Josh, so you know what I'm talking about.
So what's your favorite indicator that
cup and handle formation? That's it. There's nothing more powerful than a cup and handle, I'm convinced. And that was taught to me by William J. O'Neill. It started with Distress Business Daily, and I heard it from the man himself. Mm-hmm. If you go back when I had black hair, I was sitting in the audience. One of the first courses he taught, actually. So, you know, and I was like, you know, because at that age, I thought I knew more than I did, but I was open-minded, and yeah, so that's it. Cup and handle is. Mm-hmm.
For our Aussie investors who are listening to this, what's your favorite ASX stock in the mining space, whether it's silver, gold, whichever is your favorite pick?
Oh boy. You know, I haven't had a small company. I guess Novo. I mean, that story is unbelievable about, you know, how much gold they can potentially have. So I would say that's probably would be my favorite.
Mm-hmm. You had me at cup and handle, because I think both gold and silver have, particularly gold, I think has a big cup and handle over the last 10 years. I wanted to actually ask you something about this great saying you have is that the 90% of the move will happen in the last 10% of the time, right? Which I think that's a sort of ratio that happens in nature anyway. So I think it's quite a solid thing. But if we look at the bull market, assuming it started in around the year 2000 in precious metals, that means that
we've got about 2 years to go.
Yeah, we've kind of got 2 to 3 years, like 2022, 2023. Like we're getting there, right?
I think that's it. I really do. I mean, I, you know, right now, I don't know. I'm thinking, you know, 2022, 2023, my friend and well-known, better known than I really, Mike Maloney, did an analysis with this tech guy, and they overlaid the previous bull market on top of this one and did the adjustment. And it came out, I believe it was November of 2023. I'm pretty sure I got the date right. And I forget what the price was. I think it was in the 10,000 plus number, but I can't remember.
I think it was around, I've seen the one, I think it was around 9,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Around there. Yeah.
So, you know, and that was a little further out, but it made sense. I mean, look, if they did the math, they did it. Mike, he's got a bigger staff than me, but I love what he does. And it was very educational. I mean, one of, you know, of course, I'm interested. Everyone's interested. Tell me when, tell me why. They don't even want to know why. Just tell me, where is it going to be and when is it going to get there? And if you know those two things, if you knew that consistently, you don't have to trade in the futures market or the stock market for about 4 days.
I know. It's very exciting. I saw that clip that you're referring to, and it sort of got me thinking as well. But look, we're getting near time, and I just wanted to wrap up. But I wanted to ask you, and I wanted to kind of end on a positive note. Sure. And I wanted to ask you if you had 2 to 3 pieces of kind of advice on how people can protect their wealth. It can be philosophical advice, it can be specific advice around the markets, but how should people think about the next couple of years in the context of preserving their wealth, protecting their families?
I junior minus.
Yeah, maybe.
This is not a financial.
And hold on to your hat for the ride.
I think Jim Rickards is quite a good thinker. And actually, Jim and I were in Australia about the same time. I met him briefly there. But I would say land, gold, art doesn't really count, although it does. It is a legacy. There's 3 legacy investments. They're land, gold, and fine art. Take the fine art away because I don't know anything about it, and most people aren't that wealthy, but the ones that are probably know what they're doing in that space. I'd say, so for me, it would be land, precious metals, and education. I think the more you know about how the world works and work with it, that's wisdom, the better off you're going to be. So if I was passing on a legacy to my daughters, certainly it would be somewhat financial, but the biggest lesson, as I said, you know, be a lifelong learner. And, you know, live your passion. But that would be, it'd be more important for me as a parent to see them really dig in and be self-satisfied by eagerness to continue to learn than earn. And not that we all have to earn something. We have to have money to survive. Money's important. I made my life studying money and talking about it and what's the difference between real money and currency and all that stuff. But nonetheless, at the end of the day, you can't take it with you, you know? And if you lead a full life, it's because life challenged you and you challenged it. I remember, I'll just digress a little further because you asked the question because it just came to my mind. Remember when the internet first came out, and I was one of the early adopters. I had a computer and it was there weren't any browsers. There was a C prompt. That was all that was on the screen. And if you didn't know what to type in the computer, nothing happened. And then of course, Netscape came up with the browser. So once the browser started, I would look at the computer. I wanted to know everything. So I'd get on a computer at like 7 p.m. and it'd be like 2 or 3 in the morning because I want to know about, you know, medicinal herbs or, you know, whatever. I mean, I would just explore stuff that interested me. Like, oh, I'm not going to do that again. And then I'd get up the next night and start at 7 at night and I'd go till 2 in the morning because it was just an explosion of availability to other people's thoughts, ideas, research, all that stuff. And it was it was almost addicting to me that I could find out something, a lot about something very quickly without having to leave keep my butt in a seat. So I probably over talked it, but I'll still remember that. I took probably a week to 10 days, and finally I realized I need like a stopwatch on there. I can only watch the computer for so long, but I wanted to know, you know, everything about everything. I'm exaggerating, but you get the point, because it was a breakthrough for humanity that we'd never seen before. And of course, me being in where I was, you know, had an advantage maybe by being on the internet maybe earlier than, you know, most people, but still, now in today's world, I mean, almost everybody has access to it with their smartphone. So, you know, so I digress, but I think it was that. I think it's a non-tangible. So I throw in a non-tangible, two tangibles, land, precious metals, and education or learning. And just for a little bit of spice, junior miners.
You just made Jazz's day. I found it fascinating. It's been a real honor to talk to you. If any of our listeners would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, the best way is go to our main landing page, themorganreport.com, and sign up for our free newsletter, and all the podcasts I do are free. Got a YouTube channel, Twitter feed, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that stuff. But the main page is the best thing, especially if, you know, I get banned off of YouTube or whatever. I am on Library and Odyssey as a backup already. But the free newsletter, because, you know, we have our own server. So if anything did happen, if we have your email, we'll be able to get a hold of you or get in touch with you.
Mm-hmm. I highly recommend David's work. It's been a pleasure chatting to you. David Morgan from the Morgan Report, the Silver Guru. Thank you for chatting with us. Thank you.
John Jazz, it was real fun. Thank you. I really had a good time.